regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you once again. Sorry about being absent yesterday. Tomorrow, I should mention, by the way, we're going to have South Dakota State Senator Michaela Voida on the program talking about several pro-gun bills that were signed into law, including campus carry in the state of South Dakota. But today on the program, we're going to be talking about this new tool from the anti-gunners over at Everytown, the subject of a USA Today story. Gun control group wants to show you how and where guns are being used. So we've got a number of these databases, right? You've got the Gun Violence Archive. I think you've got the K-12 School Shooting Database, all of which, again, purport to collect information on incidents of quote-unquote gun violence, right? The problem is how this data is collected, the criteria that is used. The K-12 School Shooting Database, for instance, includes basically any quote-unquote act of gun violence, even if it was, let's say, committed by a couple of adults at midnight on a high school basketball court, you know, outside a parking lot somewhere, right? That's still considered an example of a school shooting, according to the folks that put that database together. So garbage in, garbage out, right? And the idea behind these databases is to promote the idea that quote-unquote gun violence is oh so common. And the only way, of course, to bring those numbers down is through the use of more gun control laws. So as USA Today writes, this new tool from Everytown, which is called Everyshot, right, provides, quote, near real-time updates on how and where guns are being used across the United States. Data that gun violence researchers and advocates say will become even more crucial if the Trump administration continues to roll back gun violence prevention efforts. Nick Cipollina, Senior Vice President for Law and Policy at Everytown, says that we can't just rely on the federal government to be the only source of information on gun violence. And so we are now building a tool that will help us fill that gap should the need arise. Yeah, I mean, listen, obviously the gun control groups don't want to rely on the federal government to be the arbiter of data because they want to promote the idea that, quote unquote, gun violence is out of control and is only getting worse. And if the numbers show that gun violence is trending down across the country, well, that doesn't suit their purposes now, does it? So, of course, they got to come up with their own database. As USA Today says, Everyshot will analyze tens of thousands of media reports in an attempt to compile data on every instance of gun violence in America. Users can filter the incidents using over 75 variables, including the date, location, type of shooting, type of firearm, as well as demographics of the victims and suspects. USA Today says that the data will not only include homicide, non-violent, non-fatal shootings, things of that nature, and incidents where somebody brandishes a weapon. Everyshot will also provide a narrative summary of the incident based on news reports. And that's another huge caveat here, because as we know, not every defensive gun use is reported by the media. In fact, according to statistics, the vast majority of defensive gun uses are never going to show up in a news report. You know, even that very biased study that came out of Rutgers a couple of weeks ago showed that there are well over 100,000 defensive gun uses every year. Now, I look every day, both for stories about, you know, homicides, non-fatal shootings, armed robberies, things of that nature, but also defensive gun uses. And I can tell you, I'm not running across dozens of stories every day from news media around the country reporting on defensive gun uses. So from the get-go, we know that this is not going to be a fair and impartial collection of quote-unquote gun violence incidents, right? Because they're relying, again, on news reports. I would argue, and in fact, even one gun control researcher says that he is concerned that this data or the effort here is not going to pick up every incident. Now, I will say that the gun control researchers, I think, are more concerned about not picking up things like suicide, for instance, rather than defensive gun uses. But that, too, is going to be a problem. USA Today writes that the new tool may also need additional refining to avoid duplication. In a demo version of every shot accessed by a USA Today reporter, at least one incident, the mass shooting at a concert in Louisiana appeared in the database twice, with one incorrectly stating that the attack occurred in Texas. Yeah. Again, there are all kinds of issues with AI. It's getting better every day, which is scary enough, but it is not perfect. And so Suplina with Everytown says, well, there's only going to be one person basically monitoring this database, making sure that every entry is correct here. So if that's the case, there's going to be a lot of bad information. And if you are a reporter, if you are an academic, are you going to go and check to make sure that how can you check to make sure that every instance that's compiled by every shot is in fact accurate and is not duplicative? So I think we're going to see anybody that relies on this database. I wouldn't trust any of the research, because I don't trust that this database is going to be accurate. I don't see how it can be if it is simply relying on news reports, if it is relying on AI to scrape the internet for these reports, and there's already been at least one instance of a duplication where a crime was erroneously reported to have taken place in Texas and Louisiana, same crime. But again, that's not a real problem for Everytown, right? Because if they're over-reporting incidents, that only suits Everytown's needs and desires, right? If they're underreporting, that might be a problem for Everytown, but it's not going to be an issue for them if one crime turns up to be 3, 4, 5 crimes in their database, because most people aren't going to go back and check. Most people are not going to realize the problem there, and Everytown can say, well, look, gun violence is getting worse, when in fact it seems to be getting better around much of the country. So keep your eyes on this. I mean, the gun control lobby is desperate to maintain its relevance in the Trump administration. Certainly we're seeing this at the state level with the big push for gas-operated semi-auto bans. You know, not only in Colorado, where that bill has been modified to essentially be a permit to purchase a gas-operated semi-automatic rifle. New Mexico, where their gas-operated semi-auto ban did not pass out of the legislature, but Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham is certainly hinting that she would like to see a special session. One has not formally been called yet, but it seems like she is leaning in that direction. So that bill may not be done for the year. And then in Rhode Island, you also have a gas-operated semi-auto ban that is slated for its first hearing in the House today. There are already enough co-sponsors in the House to pass that bill out of the lower chamber. Looks like it may be a question of timing, like when that bill gets called up to the House floor. Would it be done early enough that the Senate would have time to move that bill? And there are some questions again about support in the state Senate as well, particularly in the Senate Judiciary Committee, whether or not there are votes to get that bill out onto the Senate floor. But again, this is a huge priority at the state level, but they're not putting all of their eggs in the state House basket. Any more than they were only relying on the Biden administration, right, to impose gun controls. The gun control lobby is a multi-headed hydra, and they will pursue legislation wherever they can. They will pursue litigation wherever they can, helping, you know, the government of Mexico to sue gun makers, for instance. They will use the power of the regulatory state, and they'll do this at every level of government, be it federal, state, or even local, where we're seeing them get involved in zoning issues, trying to stop gun stores from opening up. They're running candidates for school board, trying to promote anti-gun policies in K-12 schools. And this database is another tool that they will use to advance their anti-gun agenda. And unfortunately, you're going to have, I think, a lot of willing, some of them unwitting, but willing accomplices in the media and the general public who will blindly parrot whatever data every shot comes up with, no matter how inaccurate it might be. All right, moving now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Let's start there in a state with plenty of gun control laws on the books. And yet, an Alton, Illinois man pleaded guilty to robbery, avoiding armed robbery charges, and avoiding prison at the same time. How about that? 32-year-old Jonathan North of Alton, Illinois pleaded guilty back in February to one count of robbery and was sentenced to 2 years probation. This was just reported in the Alton Telegraph. He had originally been charged with two counts of armed robbery, both Class X felonies, as well as two counts of aggravated unlawful use of weapons, as well as aggravated fleeing or attempting to elude. But in exchange for the guilty plea to one count of robbery, not even armed robbery, all of the other charges were dropped. Now, according to court documents, the Alton Telegraph reports that the robberies occurred in Alton while the fleeing and one of the gun charges from an incident in Venice, Illinois. According to court documents, on March the 1st of last year, North robbed an employee of the In-N-Out Package liquor store at gunpoint. In that incident, court records said a suspect matching North's description into the liquor store demanded money. After money was handed over from the register, suspect fled. Next day, according to authorities, North fled from a police officer in Venice, reaching speeds in excess of 21 miles above the posted speed limit. He was caught carrying a Smith & Wesson 9mm handgun, did not have a concealed carry permit, did not have a valid FOID card. And according to authorities, he was driving recklessly, eventually striking a curb. The vehicle was then disabled. The driver then fled on foot and was apprehended after a short pursuit. He was then released pending charges. Then a couple of weeks later, March 18th of last year, a suspect matching North's description goes back to the same liquor store. This time he's wearing a mask, shows a handgun, demands money. Then he fled in that same vehicle earlier that apparently was no longer disabled. Guess one of the wheels had been changed. About a week after that, March 23rd, officers conducted a traffic stop on this older model Buick. They identified the driver as North. A search revealed a black mask and other clothing matching items worn in the robbery from a week earlier. Then a search of North's home uncovered a second gun that he was not allowed to possess. So again, you've got multiple violent offenses, right? Multiple violent offenses, armed robbery, not once, but twice over the span of a couple of different weeks. And yet the state attorney allows him, and doesn't just allow him, offers him a plea deal that reduces all of these charges down to one count of simple robbery. And in exchange, he gets 2 years probation. So again, the state of Illinois, the lawmakers in Springfield, continuously targeting lawful gun owners. But when somebody breaks the law, commits a violent crime with a gun, what happens? Not much at all, as it turns out. All right, today's Armed Citizen story from Spanish Fort, Alabama, where a father ended up shooting a 17-year-old intruder in defense of himself and his family over the weekend. Spanish Fort Police Chief John Barber telling local media it was shortly after midnight on Saturday, a woman inside that home heard somebody outside kind of prowling around. She woke up her husband. And then they heard the sound of breaking glass in one of their front windows. Chief Barber says the 17-year-old juvenile forcibly enters into this residence where he is confronted by the father, who's got a wife and three kids in this house. Barber said the father, who appeared to be acting in self-defense, fired one shot with a pistol, hitting the intruder in the upper abdomen. Barber said there's somebody in the residence in the middle of the night, unknown to them. There is a reasonable belief then that somebody can be harmed in his family. Absolutely. Again, somebody breaks into your home in the middle of the night. They're not there to give you a gift. They're not playing Secret Santa, right? You can assume that they are there for nefarious purposes. And you can assume that they pose a threat to your life and limb. According to the police chief, the 17-year-old flown to University Hospital, where at last reported he was in serious condition. The chief says he does not live in the neighborhood where the shooting occurred, but is a resident of Baldwin County. Apparently, he was at a home nearby earlier in the night with some of his friends. Police chief said, it's our belief that the juvenile suspect was under the influence of a substance when this actually occurred. He said the teenager was by himself at this point. The motives aren't clear. He said, we don't understand what his intent might have been. We just know that based on the physical evidence on the scene, the entry appears to be broken glass. He did make entry into the home, and the teen may be facing criminal charges, including burglary. All right, so let's assume for a second that this 17-year-old was inebriated, intoxicated, under the influence of something. Maybe he thought that he was at the home that he was at earlier. Why he would choose to break a window to try to get inside is beyond me. But again, if you're under the influence, you're probably not thinking straight. The residents of this home had no idea. And by the way, just because somebody is under the influence doesn't mean that they're not a threat, right? So again, based on all of the information available to this homeowner, a stranger breaks through their window, gains entry into their home in the middle of the night. Yeah, you have a reasonable belief at that point that your life and the lives of your family members are in danger. So we keep our eyes open for any more updates to this story out of Spanish Fort, Alabama. But again, right now, the homeowner not facing any charges and quite frankly, not expected to. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A man in Ripley, Oklahoma, who helped save a 95-year-old woman from her burning home. This was during the wildfires there a few weeks ago. I was talking to my daughter who just moved back to Oklahoma. She's over in the eastern part of the state. And thankfully, they didn't have anything like this. But, man, central Oklahoma, western Oklahoma, you get that Oklahoma wind, you know, whipping through the prairie, dry brush, one spark. That's all it took, right? And you had massive wildfires. I think at least 4 people were killed in these wildfires. Thankfully, Arzella Dennis was not one of them. But her home was a total loss. And she was inside when her home was on fire. When a guy named Matt Leverage, who just was driving down the road, saw the flames. He said there were fires everywhere that day. And he decided that, you know what? I got to stop. He said he was on his way to checking his sister in Stillwater, Oklahoma, when he ran across Dennis's home. He said the flames were wrapping around the door of the house when he showed up. Azalea Dennis said, I walked back into my bedroom. I was trying to get my safe and my purse, and I didn't get it out. She said smoke got in there, so I ran back to the kitchen, which was on this end of the home, and the fire was leaping up there, and then a guy had come by. She was trying to get some personal belongings out, but then she said she got trapped. Leverage said he called 911 and told him, hey, there's an elderly lady inside this house and it's on fire. And he said a dispatcher told him help's on the way. But he said at that point, he just knew that they weren't going to get there in time. So he said, I literally threw my phone in my pocket. I ran in and I grabbed her. And he says, it's a good thing she was close to the door because any further, she wouldn't have made it out. It's amazing. It really is. Again, I was going to say no thought of danger to himself. I'm sure Matt Leverage thought of the danger to himself. You'd have to be crazy not to. There's a house on fire. You're about to run inside. But knowing that somebody was in there, Matt Leverage's conscience would not let him wait until the authorities showed up. As Dennis said, he just drove by and saw it and he ran in there. And so he grabbed me and drug me outside. The fire was leaping up there at the door when I got out. The home that she's lived in for 70 years is gone now, with virtually everything inside up in smoke. And that is a tragedy in and of itself, no doubt. I mean, to lose a lifetime of memories like that, to lose the roof over your head at 95, my God. But Azalea Dennis did not lose her life that day. And she is here to talk about the heroism and the bravery displayed by Matt Leverage because of his quick thinking, his fast action, and his willingness to help someone in need. So, in the right place. And by the way, she says, I'm just thankful for everything. She said, I'm not bitter because the Lord's taking care of me. It's wonderful. So there you go. A wonderful attitude in the face of some really challenging times. I'm sure that Azalea Dennis in her 95 years has seen some challenging times before, but again, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to help a stranger in need, Matt Leverage there in Oklahoma. We thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Again, our guest is going to be Michaela Voida, state senator from South Dakota, talking about not just one good pro-Second Amendment bill signed into law, campus carry, but a couple of other good pieces of legislation as well. A pretty successful year in South Dakota, in a state that is already pretty well known for its good gun laws on the books. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be sure to check out BearingArms.com if you like what you see. Also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Help support the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing. You'll get exclusive content and other goodies. You'll also get that warm, fuzzy feeling again of knowing that you're helping to debunk some of the lies from the anti-gun side. We'll see you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.